There you go. Well, let's begin with a prayer. Gracious and holy God, Lord, the topic we're talking about, forgiving, it's so fundamental to everything that Christian faith is about. And it's not just us forgiving others, and it's not just you forgiving us. It's a topic that's meant to move all of us to a level of living that moves away from pain and moves towards hope and joy and grace and life and light and your presence and you. And so, Lord, we ask that in this time that ultimately everything we're talking about would be things that nurture that life in us. And Lord, we ask this in Christ's name. Amen. Well, those of you who are here, I'm glad that you're here, because it's always nice after you do a first class to have people who come back for a second. And so it's great to have all of you. And for those of you watching on video, I forgive you. And we're really glad that you're still with us, even by video. I'm going to begin sharing my screen. I do want to ask if anybody has questions or thoughts. Well, let me do this. I'm going to share my screen, and I'm going to do a quick review of some of the stuff that we talked about last week. And then I'm going to kind of ask a quick question if anybody has a just any thoughts or anything that came to you. By the way, this says based on the work of Gregory Lester, that's going to come later. And I'll tell you when that is. The first part is not based on Greg Lester. So we talked last week about what does it mean to forgive? And I really wanted to have everybody kind of develop this idea that when you forgive, it's a gift. And that's a really important thing to understand, that you can't be compelled to forgive. You can't be forced to forgive. And even when somebody says, well, you just have to forgive them, that's not something that's just easy to do. That part of forgiving is recognizing that it's a gift that you give to someone else who doesn't deserve it, or may not have actually done anything to earn it. You know, there's an understanding that for people to forgive, someone has to repent. Well, I don't know. Jesus forgave on the cross. Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And there was no repentance. I mean, he just forgave. And I think that there's a reality that it's because it's a gift. And the nature of God is to give. The nature of God is to give life and to give love and to give opportunity. You know, and it doesn't discount the bad things that happen, but it's saying that there are good things. And when we give the gift of forgiving, we are giving gifts that aren't just from us, but they're also from God. We talked about different thoughts on forgiveness. People often confuse forgiving with condoning, and people often confuse forgiving with forgetting. And then we looked at a video of Bud Welch, and then we also talked a bit. So before I keep going, I do want to check, are there questions or thoughts that anybody had in reflection on last week? Well, good. Well, I will keep going. And if you do have questions as I go along, I'm going to stop periodically to ask questions, but please feel free to kind of try to interrupt and keep me going, because I want to go where you're going. So going back to this, I want to go back to the slide that I just shared, because I want to keep going on these thoughts for forgiveness. People often confuse forgiving with condoning. It is not condoning. It is not saying what you did was okay. It's simply saying, I'm not going to hold on to this burden, and I'm going to let it go, and I'm going to let you go. Also, people often confuse forgiving with forgetting. And it's not forgetting. the things that we forgive, the pain will stay with us, or at least the memories will stay with us. When we forgive, it actually can allow the pain to abate and to let go of the pain that we feel, but it's not forgetting. And it's not necessarily trusting. There are, when we forgive people, we basically are saying, look, I'm not gonna hold this burden, and I'm not gonna judge you and hold it against you. But sometimes it's also, I'm not gonna ever trust you again. And not trusting is not the same as not forgiving. Just because you forgive someone doesn't mean you have to embrace that person. It just simply means I'm not going to allow the pain of that to control my life. And therefore, I'm not going to allow you to do that. But moving forward also, people often confuse forgiving with capitulation. Capitulation basically, you know, they think that capitulation is weakness. What capitulation is when we capitulate to someone, we continue to make ourselves a victim of the other. That is not what forgiving does. Forgiving is not weakness that leads us to be a victim. It is a strength that allows us to no longer be victimized. Forgiving is also letting go of victimhood, and it's also reclaiming our lives. And I do recognize there may be a question here, so I'm going to just check. The handout. Sorry about that. And I think this is important because one of the things that is part of our culture, and it's really become part of our culture over the past 5-10 years, is there has become an increased focus on strength and weakness. There has been an increased focus on, we have to be strong as Americans. We have to be strong as men. We have to be strong as a people. And that those who aren't strong, who are weak, that they deserve whatever they get. And forgiving does not go along with that. It is not, it's not weakness. It's actually being stronger than those who often think of it as being weakness. Basically what it's saying is, I will no longer be a victim. I will no longer be victimized. I will no longer allow you to dominate me. I am going to forgive you, and I am going to move on without you. I am going to move on without allowing you to live inside my head. I'm going to move on without allowing, the tapes of that circulating tape of pain to just go on. I am going to break out of that loop, and I will be moving on in my life. I will not be a victim. Instead, I will become something else. I will grow out of this, and I will become better. So as I said, people often confuse forgiveness with weakness. It does take strength to forgive. And when we let pain dominate us, it weakens us. Last time we read the beginning of Luke 27 through 38, you know, where it says, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. And we talked about how forgiving is actually doing these things. And one of the things I think most people don't realize is when you love your enemies and do good to those who hate you, you are exhibiting incredible strength because you are not allowing the other person to control your behavior, but instead you are choosing an alternative way. But Jesus went on, and this is the part that we didn't read last time. He says, do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. And, you know, this is not transactional. I think we can think about it as, well, there's a transaction going on, that if we don't judge, God won't judge us, and we'll be free of judgment because we haven't judged. And if we don't condemn, God's not going to condemn us. That's actually not what Jesus was getting to, that there's a transaction here, that if you exhibit good behavior, God will exhibit good to you. This is a little bit different. It's basically saying, if you refuse to judge, then you will move out of a life that's just mere human life. where everything is based on judgment and gossip and all, and you will now transcend it. There will be no reason to judge you because you've now transcended it. It's also when you don't condemn, you're not condemned because you're living in a way in which condemning isn't part of it. You've just moved it out of your life. And so he goes, forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. He's not, and again, we think of this as transactional, but I think that sometimes because we don't recognize the spirituality of what Jesus is teaching. He's basically saying, when you forgive, you transcend human life. And you then become more and more open to God's grace. You become more and more open to God's gifts. And it's not a, you know, well, I forgave somebody, so now God, what's my gift? It's, I am now living with a sense of forgiveness, and now I am experiencing God's presence and God's grace all around me. And then it says, a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, it will be put in your lap. For the measure you give will the measure you get back. In other words, the more you grow spiritually and the more you're able to transcend this human life. We talked last week about how humans are amphibians living in the material and the spiritual world at the same time. The more you live this life of forgiveness, the more you live in a spiritual realm that still exists in the human realm, but then it begins to overflow into your life. So forgiving isn't just an act. Forgiving is also a way of living a more deeply spiritual life that moves us into a different way of living. So I want to share with you another video. And this is a guy named Michael Morton, and he just will tell you his story.
There were many years where I was very, very angry. I spent a number of years on the inside plotting the murders of the people who were responsible for my incarceration. I knew who they were. I mean, the irony wasn't lost to me. I'm in prison for life, for murder that I hadn't done, and yet I'm plotting all these things. And I knew that I had to, supposed to forgive those people, but the truth of it was I didn't want to.
Michael Morton, now a free man after spending 25 years in a Texas prison for a murder he did not commit. He walked out of the Williamson County Courthouse surrounded by his family this afternoon.
In a very remarkable period of time while he was in prison, Michael changed. By the time he came out of prison, he was the man that I met.
If you want to be forgiven, you have to forgive. You do it for yourself. You don't do it for everybody. It was about me. Those murders that I was plotting were right in front of me. I consciously, deliberately, took that first one on the list and said, I forgive you. To release that kind of stuff was wonderful. But I've learned that it's easier to forgive someone for something they've done to you than it is to forgive somebody for something they've done to someone else.
You promise the testimony that you give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes, I do.
Please have a seat, please.
Something had happened to my wife. She had called, so something's wrong, and so of all the bad things that could have happened, I didn't know if anything happened to my son.
Okay.
So ask about him first.
Okay.
I know in my mind, I'll get to a point where I can forgive him, but I also have to be candid enough to tell anybody who asks that I'm not there yet. Your trial is what makes you. Cancer, unemployment, bankruptcy. When you come out on the other side of that, when you're able to look back and sort of assess what it meant and where I am now, that's the important thing, because it makes you who you are.
So he said, your trial is what makes you. What things stood out to you in this short video? And since you're not appearing, if you want to just answer, just go ahead and unmute yourself and offer an answer. You don't have to share your video. But what are some thoughts on what came out through this video? Ted, is that you ready to speak?
Graham, I like the notion that you can acknowledge that you're not ready to forgive somebody consciously. Yeah. I think that's an interesting idea.
Well, and it's based on it's a process. You know, forgiving isn't just something you do. It's something that you have to work really hard at, because it's about personal transformation. It's about allowing yourself to be changed, but also being intentional about changing yourself. What other things stood out in the video?
Stood out to me was the sense that he understood that it had to come in stages.
Yeah.
He worked through this, but he seemed to be at peace with the stage where he was at that point, knowing that he hadn't forgiven the murderer yet. He knew that would perhaps come, but he still seemed to be at peace. And I thought that was worth remembering.
Yeah. He also, you know, it's in some ways, he was able to forgive, you know, with the people who prosecuted him, put him in jail. He was able to almost say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. But it was harder to forgive the guy who murdered his wife, because he knew what he was doing. And that makes it more difficult to forgive when somebody does something intentionally. There's a lot of pain that we inflict on each other unintentionally. For whatever reasons, you know, they're not always, most of the time they're not malicious. And so it's easier to forgive that, but it's harder to forgive when somebody does something that's intentional, and that for them, it's coming out of their deeper, darker recesses of their lives. Anything else, Joan? It looked like you were going to say something.
Yeah, I thought it was striking that it was so obvious to his partner that by the time he came out of prison that he had made a significant change. And this was so evident to her.
Yeah. Yeah. As she said, she fell in love with the person who was transformed by the trials, not with the person beforehand. Any other last thoughts before I move on?
Graham, I was struck by how he's sitting in prison for life and going person to person and thinking about killing them.
Yes.
And it reminded me of Jesus saying in the Sermon on the Mount, you have heard that it was said by them of old, thou shalt not kill. But I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother or sister is in danger of the judgment. The power of holding on to that anger, of relishing, imagining what he would do to them, how he would kill them, and thinking that would somehow bring him some relief.
Yeah. Yeah. I think actually you also bring out something that is, to me, is fundamental about Christian faith. But I don't think that it's hard for people to grab hold of. You know, often people think of Christian faith as a call to good behavior or good thinking or good being. And So why do we forgive? Well, we forgive because God tells us to forgive, because that's the good behavior that God wants for us. And if we do it, we'll be rewarded. I think what you just brought up, that's, I think the idea that it's God doesn't seek good behavior. God seeks transformation. And it's the transformation of us from living these lives that are just material and biological and focused on you know, the idea of eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. I mean, that's just, that comes straight out of Darwinism, you know, survival of the fittest. You hurt me, so I now must hurt you. And what Jesus does is he's actually calling us to transcend that. You know, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth makes the whole world blind. I say to you, you know, forgive others, you know, pray for your enemies, love your enemies. You know, it's a transformation from this lower level of living to a higher level of living. And forgiveness is fundamental as part of that. And that's part of the transformation he's going through. He's making plans in his mind, fantasies of murdering everybody who's hurt him. But slowly he realizes that this is like an anchor pulling me down, or it's like cement shoes pulling me down underwater. And there's another life that I'm called to. And that's the transformation. And one of the things in the field of spirituality that's kind of a common theme is that, you know, doesn't matter whether God is the one who's responsible for the pain that comes in our lives. You know, that's not really the question. The question is, okay, whatever pain comes in our lives, how is God using those struggles, those pains, those turmoils to transform us into something better? And you notice that the people who often become, you know, deeply spiritual often have deep pain and often have to go through deep forgiveness to get to a more transcendent level. So let me keep going. So more thoughts on forgiveness. And I'm going to move on to pretty soon, how do we, you know, what gets in the way of forgiving. Forgiving is rooted in generosity as much as it is in love. And it's a gift that we're called to give that shares God's love with others. And it spreads God's grace. Again, this is this idea of forgiveness as a gift rather than an obligation. It's a gift that we can give to others who may not deserve it and may not have earned it. And when we forgive another or others, we're choosing to live in a spiritual way grounded in love and God's desire for us. It's the ultimate gift we're giving. When we refuse to forgive, we're grounding our lives in resentment and anger and hurt and self-protectiveness, all states that inhibit love and inhibit a connection with God. I love the quote from Nelson Mandela. If you remember, he was the president of South Africa, the first Black president of South Africa, who spent 25 years in jail and doing hard labor. I mean, what his day was, he would come out of his cell and they would put a pile of rocks in the courtyard, and he and all the others had to just break rocks. It was purposely a purposeless exercise meant to demean people. And he did 25 years of this and came out of it. And instead of wanting retribution, he forgave. And he actually led to a kind of reconciliation in South Africa, you know, that they're still working on, but led them out of the apartheid era. And he said, resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies. Resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies. This is what you saw with Michael Morton. He recognized that he was resenting, he was making plans for murder, not actual plans, but fantasies of murder. And he realized that it was poisonous to him. And he realized that even holding on to the anger and resentment towards the guy who murdered his wife, that at some level that's toxins within him. Forgiving is healing, and it's a healing for ourselves and for others. When we forgive, we heal relationships, we heal spirits, we heal minds. And in the same way, by the way, judging, condemning, vengeance, ridicule are all scarring and actually promote sinfulness in ourselves and others. But forgiving is rooted in God and God's grace. And let me share with you a story that really has been transforming to me in my understanding of forgiveness. I don't know how many of you have ever read Corrie Ten Boom's The Hiding Place. I mention this book a lot whenever I do classes or teach, because Corrie Ten Boom was just one of these people who just, you know, she was a miracle. And I would suggest, you know, add to your Lenten, whatever you're doing, go get a copy on Amazon or somewhere else of the book, The Hiding Place, her book, The Hiding Place, and read it. It's a chronicling of her life story of in Holland during World War II, as the Nazis took over, she and her family made a prayerful decision and felt called to hide Jews. And they did. And eventually they were ratted out and the Gestapo captured them. They never found the Jews they were hiding, but the Gestapo captured them. And she was actually put in solitary confinement for 3 months and then was sent to two different concentration camps. I think one of them was Birkenau. I can't remember what the other one was. It might've been Ravensbrück, but I'm not exactly sure. But at any rate, she ended up going into the concentration camp, and there were a lot of really miraculous things that happened there, but her sister died. She watched her sister die in the concentration camp. And when she came out, both her brother and her father were dead. And Corrie Ten Boom came out of it feeling a call to travel throughout Germany to preach a message of forgiveness. And she tells this story of, she had given this talk in Munich. And during this talk in Munich, there was a, she said, whenever she gave these talks in Germany that you know, God has forgiven you. She said, people at the end, nobody clapped, nobody smiled. She said, it was always full, but people would just get up and walk out. And she said, it's really because of the shame that they felt. But she said, in Munich, she gave this talk. And as they're all walking out, this guy comes walking towards her. And he's wearing kind of a loden jacket and a hat and, you know, a little feather and all that kind of stuff. And she said, but when he was walking towards her, she didn't see the guy who was coming towards her. She saw this guy as he was, as the most brutal guard in the prison camp or the concentration camp. And she said she froze because, you know, it was like, here's this guy coming to do more harm to me. And the guy came up to her and said, Fraulein, what you said was beautiful and I believe it. And he said, since the war, I've become a Christian and I've changed my life. And he said, I did terrible things in the concentration camp. And I can see by the way you're looking at me that you know who I am, even though I don't know who you are and I don't recognize you. And he said, I know, and he had, I think at least what I remember, he had kind of a tear in his eye. He said, I know God has forgiven me, but I need you to forgive me. And Corrie Ten Boom basically said everything in her body said no. Everything in her body said, this man is dangerous. He's awful. He can never be forgiven for what he did to me, my family, other people I witnessed. And she said, though, she had this sense of, but I'm called to forgive. And God's calling me to this other life. And this guy put his hand out to shake her hand and she froze. And she started praying and she said to God, God, I can't forgive this man for what he did, but I know you're calling me to forgive him. So Lord, I need you to forgive him through me. And she said that as she was praying, she felt like something was just like entering her body. And she just watched as she noticed her hand coming up. She said it was almost like something else was controlling her arm and the hand went into his. And she literally said she felt like an electricity, which she described as grace, God's grace. She said it entered her and it flowed through her arm into this man. And she said at that point, she realized forgiveness doesn't just come from us. That forgiveness is something we do that taps into God and taps into God's grace and God's presence. And so when we forgive, it can't just be us. It can't just be us forgiving all on our own, but there's an element of forgiving where we have to make the connection with God so that really what happens when we forgive, it becomes a conduit for God's grace. It's not just us, but it's also God doing it with us. This transformed my understanding of forgiveness because it made me realize that ultimately forgiveness isn't just a mental and a physical act or a psychological or emotional act. It is rooted as a spiritual act that when we forgive, we are tapping into God. We are allowing ourselves to be conduits for grace. We are allowing ourselves to be God's presence to other people, that Christ is in us wanting to work through us. And it's not just forgiveness. I mean, this is what really deep Christian spirituality is about. You know, if you really want to think about it, it's the vine and the branches. John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches. Apart from me, you can do nothing. So live in me as I live in you, and you will bear much fruit. And it's this metaphor. It's not just about forgiveness, but it's about everything that we do. The more we connect ourselves to God's grace and God's life throughout, it's not just forgiveness that flows through us. It's love. And it's healing, and it's life, and it's light, and it's presence, and it's hope, and it's joy, and it's peace, and it's kindness, and it's just all of these things. And so forgiveness, forgiving others, is really simply part of a larger spiritual life in which we are really trying to allow God to work through us. I'm gonna stop there, and again, just see if anybody has thoughts or questions or comments about that.
So this is Ted. The one thing that keeps coming up to me in everything you're saying that is perhaps hard to reconcile is not so much the value of forgiveness. You know, what do I get from it in terms of the little spiritual boost that comes, but the challenge of separating forgiveness from a sense of being right or being wronged or needing justice. And, whether it was that first example or really everything that you've said, the fundamental thing is all of those things are irrelevant to forgiveness.
At least
have to put them in a different place.
Yeah, at least from our perspective. Again, forgiving someone doesn't mean we don't hold someone accountable. In other words, Michael Morton, eventually is going to have to forgive the guy who murdered his wife for his own spiritual welfare. And probably for that guy too. That guy, he needs some kind of level of forgiveness and grace. But that doesn't mean you're not held accountable. Those are two separate things. Justice and forgiveness are separate in that sense. Justice is about holding someone accountable. Forgiveness is about freeing yourself from the burden of the pain, freeing yourself from the burden of how I've been harmed. And they really are different things, but you can actually be dispassionate. When you forgive someone, you can become dispassionate about them suffering the consequences of their actions. And what I mean by that is, if somebody's really hurt me, I'll forgive them, but I'm not going to protect them from what the consequences are. And I'm going to support the punishment that needs to take place. And part of it is because that's about the transformation of the other person. My forgiveness helps transform them. But so does the punishment. So does the justice that's meted down on them. And, Ted, this is a really important distinction. I do think justice needs to require forgiveness and allow for transformation. Because sometimes in our culture, we're caught between, for example, imprisonment. Is going to prison about rehabilitation or punishment? personally, as a Christian, I believe it's always about transformation. Set up the context where someone can be transformed. But, you know, there's a huge part of our population and a Christian part of our population that believes it's just retribution and punishment. And I'm going to talk about why that is in a bit, not necessarily that way. Any other thoughts or questions before I move on? I'm going to skip a couple of slides. If you're actually looking at the handouts that you download them, I'm going to skip a couple of slides and I'm going to come back to them if we have time, or pick them up next week if we have time. So grounding back again in Luke, this is Jesus. Two others also who are criminals were led away to be put to death with him. When they came to the place that is called the skull, they crucified Jesus there with the criminals. One on his right, one on his left. Then Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." One of the criminals who were hanged there kept deriding him and saying, "Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed have been condemned justly, for we are getting what we deserve for our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." He replied, "Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." There's something powerful about this passage that you know, he actually, interestingly enough, he doesn't say to the guy who is making fun of him, "And you are going to hell." He just didn't address it. But what he did say to this other guy is, in this moment, you have transcended. You have opened to a more spiritual life. And you have opened to God's kingdom. And he's saying to him, you know, there's a degree to which that openness is now moving you to a different way of living. So I want to, I kind of want to go back. I'm sort of using the other guy on the cross as an example of why it's so hard to forgive. So why is forgiving so hard? Well, I'm now going to be opening you up to the world of counseling and things that counselors understand that maybe others don't. So why is forgiving so hard? The answer is, it's all rooted in our biology and our survival instinct. The harder it is for us to forgive in general, the more we are living according to survival instinct. And by the way, a huge segment of our culture lives in survival instinct. I mean, I want you to think about just, you know, the stuff we've gone through in the past 4 years, you know, whether it's the pandemic or the polarization, there is clearly a portion of our culture that is scared of everything that's going on and is all about survival. I have to stockpile food. I have to stockpile water. I have to stockpile guns. I have to do things to make myself safe because bad things are going to happen. You know, we're all going to be taken over by hordes of commies, or, you know, we're all going to be taken over by hordes of blacks or minorities or whatever it is. And you know, you can't deny it. We have a powerful survival instinct, and it's there all the time. If all of a sudden right now you heard a loud noise, you would startle and jump. That's your survival startle response that basically is saying, "Oh, I got to protect myself. I got to get ready to either flee or you know, fight or flight." And it's there all the time. And whether you know it or not, it comes up just like in spouses, in arguments we have with each other. You know, think about the arguments you have with your husband or your wife. You know, they say something they think is innocuous, and you don't, and you react to it really strongly. Well, in a lot of cases, it's because something that person has said has demeaned you and diminished you, and it has evoked your survival instinct. All of us are hardwired to defend ourselves against threats, and forgiving others makes us vulnerable. All of us are hardwired to defend ourselves against threats, and forgiveness makes us vulnerable. Threats can be both biological or they can be conceptual. It is the reason why political arguments often devolve into anger and hurt, or theological arguments, because we have these strongly held beliefs and ideals, and they are part of our self-concept. And when someone criticizes us or attacks our beliefs, it feels, your body experiences it as a survival threat. In other words, go ahead. Yep. Was that someone asking a question? Okay, I'll keep going. What we have a hard time forgiving are often actions by others that have hurt us physically, emotionally, and/or spiritually, and that pique our survival instinct. As I mentioned before, we are not only amphibians living simultaneously in the biological and spiritual world, but we also are amphibians living simultaneously in the biological and conceptual realm. My dog, for instance, has very few concepts about anything other than, oh, he's going into the kitchen. Maybe that means I can get a biscuit. You know, the dog doesn't think about things other than biological. We get caught up in the conceptual realm all the time. You know, we're always thinking thoughts. It's hard to stop it. You know, we have business concepts. We have family concepts. We have church concepts. We have theological concepts. We have political concepts. We have all these concepts and ideals swirling around in our heads. And we're wired to protect ourselves against biological and self-conceptual attacks, which means that physical, emotional, or spiritual attacks evoke our survival instinct. And it's powerful. And it's much more powerful than most of us recognize. And it influences so much of our behavior, even outside of the realm of forgiveness. For example, how many of you watched the Penguins game last night? How many of you would have been upset if the Penguins had lost to the really terrible Buffalo Sabres? Well, you know, quite frankly, our concept as a fan of the Penguins is they should be winning Stanley Cups every year. They should be on top, because when that happens, they should be impervious to everything. We identify with the Penguins. And so when they lose, there's something about a loss that attacks our self-concept and evokes our survival instincts. It's tribal, though. It's something larger than just individual, that we're part of tribes, and tribes are always defending themselves. I mean, this goes into football. You know, why do we hate the New England Patriots? Unless there's somebody there who actually likes the New England Patriots. Well, it's because they beat the Steelers all the time. And when they do it, it's usually in a championship game and there's high stakes. And when the Steelers lose, you know, nobody thinks about the fact that they just got to the AFC championship game, which means they're in the top four of the NFL. Everybody thinks in terms of, oh my gosh, you know, we're no good. We're terrible. You know, what, second place is the first loser. It's just this, you know, we bring this stuff into everything. And so we end up having lots of defensive reactions when we've been hurt by others. We can have self-blame, or when we hurt other people, we can have self-blame or self-criticism. We can attack other people. We can develop hyper-awareness in case somebody else is going to hurt us. We have a generalization of threats, you know, that if Joe Biden becomes president, we're all going to become commies and most of us will be living in a gulag. Or we repress it, or we become hyper-protective. All of these protect us from further hurt, but they also inhibit our ability to forgive. This is really what I'm trying to make you aware of, is how biological we actually are and how our biology works against forgiving. Our biology works against it. Our spirituality is integrated into our biology, but our biology also can inhibit our ability to grow spiritually. So what happens is past pains shape our defensiveness, much like an immune system uses past illnesses to prevent future illnesses. Past pains and conflicts are remembered not only with a particular person, but with people in general. So we project those pains onto other people and also protect ourselves in similar future events. So the idea of forgiving those who've hurt us makes us vulnerable to being hurt again, and because our defense system screams out for us not to be vulnerable. And this is the problem with forgiving. Forgiving another makes us vulnerable. And our bodies don't want us to be vulnerable. And so it's that tussle. If Michael Morton forgives the murder of his wife, it makes him vulnerable in ways that are just really hard to explain, but are biological. And that's why he says he has to work on it. It is this dialogue between the spirit and the body of which one's going to lead our lives. Are we going to be led by a spirituality that includes forgiveness, or are we going to live by a biology that wants retribution? So forgiving, why does it feel like condoning and forgetting? When we forgive, we have to be willing to feel vulnerable, even though forgiving actually makes us stronger. It makes us vulnerable to the other who's hurt us, which feels like we are forgetting or condoning. But it also calls on us to let go of the power we feel when we hold on to resentment. Holding on to resentment, anger, bitterness, resentment, they make us feel more powerful, even if they weaken us. And you know this. Think about times that you have gone on an angry rant. You don't feel weak in those times. You feel powerful. You know, that as you become more and more angry and as you complain more and more, that there's almost like an angry power surge that comes through us that you know, I should just go there and do blah, 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 even though it actually can weaken us. Here's a way you can tell, by the way, of how anger, bitterness, resentment, everything, you know, and the need to be strong instead of humble comes in. Think about any story you have told somebody about a hurt you've had or something that's happened. You'll tell the story as though you were the hero. You know, this person did this, but I said this, or this person did this, so I did this. One of the things about therapy, which helps you understand this, and Barbara, you understand this. One of the things about going into therapy is you have to start telling your story not as the hero, but as the vulnerable. Because it's by becoming aware of your vulnerability and accepting and embracing it, you actually develop a greater emotional and psychological and spiritual health. Because the more you hold on to the power, the harder it is to do that. And I just did something here on my screen. Give me a second. I just hit something by mistake on my screen and it just paused everything. So give me a second. So what life conditions make forgiving harder? Those who have a more positive disposition towards life are often quicker to forgive pains, even egregious ones. People with a greater sense of self-esteem are generally more willing to forgive while holding on to pains and slights reflect a lower self-esteem and can actually contribute to a lower self-esteem. Those with a strong sense of justice are often slower to forgive, as is an eye for an eye mentality, as well as apologize and seek forgiveness for others. I always think about the song from the play Hair. How can people be so heartless? How can they ignore their friends easy? You know, that song is about, you know, who care about people with social injustice, who care about evil and social injustice, how about a needing friend, and I need a friend. And it's this idea that sometimes when we get caught up in the strength of seeking justice, that at the same time, we can actually be harder to forgive others around us and to nurture those relationships. Basically, forgiveness calls on us to treat others as equals. And, you know, that we're treating them as equal, not as a superior or even as someone lower than us. It engages in an I-thou relationship where we accept the other person rather than I-it. And it calls on us to adopt the spiritual response to emotional and physical pain. It leads us to be rooted in what God wants for us rather than what our more base instincts want for us. I'm going to stop there and see if anybody has comments or questions, because then I want to move on to another, well, we've gone over time, so I probably can't really go too much in the other stuff. So I'll pick the other stuff up next time. Any thoughts or comments or questions about what we've been talking about?
So this is Ted. I shared something in the a link to a story that's in the Washington Post this week about a family that just is kind of falling apart because of a sense of feeling threatened,
I
wronged,
read that.
Aggrieved.
It's a long article. The people up in Maine.
Yeah. And I think it's really worth reading, and it really relates to what you just said. And I think about that last slide where you, and I forget the first bullet on your slide, but it was about feeling threatened, or you've probably got that handy. I don't have your PDF open, but you know, forgiveness calls on us to treat people breaking down. No, I think it's the next one. The next slide. Positive disposition toward life. That's the one. You know, feeling threatened really gets in the way of being able to offer forgiveness. And it just occurred to me in that story that the mother is feeling threatened by her children, and the children are feeling threatened by her mother's beliefs, their mother's beliefs. And you know, as long as that sense of being threatened is there, it really takes us away from a mindset where we can be ready to forgive people.
Well, and just to give a little more context to it, the story that Ted's talking about is a mother who lives in Maine. She's remarried, and her husband is heavily into QAnon conspiracies. And so the mother got into QAnon conspiracies. And the daughters, they've had a real struggle with this because the mother has just been persistent in sending them emails and things. And the QAnon theories have just gotten more and more outrageous. And they felt real pain about this because it's become this abyss between them. And the one daughter, interestingly enough, had cancer. And the mother moved down to Maryland with her for a while, I think it was Maryland, to take care of her. And for that whole month, her mother didn't talk about conspiracy theories. She was lovely. She was wonderful. She was incredibly helpful. And then as soon as she went back to Maine, she started up again. And it really put the family in conflict of how do we love our mother, even though we think our mother is nuts and crazy and all these conspiracies are driving a wedge between us. And I think a lot of us have had these kinds of struggles in the past years. I know that for my wife and I, we talked about this back in 2016, that we were not going to allow the election to disrupt our families. You know, we had people who, you know, absolutely detested Donald Trump. And we had people who, you know, you can understand this growing up in Swickley, really think that Donald Trump is wonderful because he's making everybody richer. And, you know, that's all that really matters, and the rest of it doesn't matter. And we made the decision that our families are about love and relationships, not. And so, you know, ultimately what we said is, you know, we're not, these aren't things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the things normal families talk about. But Ted, that the article is really good in talking about the struggles of how do we deal with our mother? And, you know, do we forgive something that's ongoing, you know, that's still ongoing?
The mother's struggle on forgiving was really about feeling like her husband was being attacked by her children. And there was a lot of, you know, a lot of anger toward that husband that they were just unable to set aside. So there was anger on both sides.
Yeah, and Ted, actually, that article brings up a really good, it shows what I'm talking about. So really what's happened is the daughters and the mother and the husband all had biological reactions based on their concepts. They had these strong political beliefs that if what they are doing doesn't happen, everything's going to fall apart. They feel a survival level threat. And it's exactly what Greg Lester talks about, you know, that we are biological. And, you know, we have a tendency to think that we are rational. I will tell you something I have learned over time. Most rational thought is based on emotion, not rationality. I'm not talking about scientific discoveries, but most of the time, you know, that the woman you talked about who's really into QAnon conspiracies, believes that those are all rational conspiracies, but it's based on the emotion. And we have a tendency to do the same thing with, you know, whether if we're liberal, moderate, or conservative, we tend to wrap our beliefs with survival instinct. And so when we're in a discussion, that article, I'm glad you brought that up, because it was it was a really long article. I just tell you, you kind of put aside time for it, but it really shows how both sides attach biological survival instincts to these concepts. Other thoughts or questions or comments about what we've been talking about? Or maybe I'll ask a different question. What thoughts struck you from what we've been talking about? Go ahead, Dan.
I don't have a thought or question, but what I am going to do, since we're coming up on the hour, is go ahead and pause the recording and let the discussion continue and say thank you very much. This has been outstanding.